The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prepare your ears, humans. Happy, Sad, Confused begins now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Colin Farrell takes us on a dark adventure with the Northwater, plus talk of the Batman. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Well, they don't come much more talented and charming than Mr. Colin Farrell. This guy's great. I love talking to him. He, of course, was on the podcast not so long ago. It was definitely pre-pandemic. We talked for Dumbo. That speaks to the breadth of his work right there, from a Disney live-action adventure to The Darkest of Tales, a whaling expedition in the 1850s. Yeah, that's the diversity of a career right then and there. But this is a great chat. I love talking to Colin Farrell. He is open and honest and sweet and knows his movies and just checks all the boxes. This catch-up, as I said, the main reason for it was to get the good word out on The Northwater, which is a 6-part limited series. This is based on a best-selling book, best-selling novel, I should say. As I said, it takes place in the 1850s in the Arctic. They shot this for real, on location, in extreme circumstances, and it is all up on the screen. It stars Colin alongside the very talented Jack O'Connell, and the character that Colin portrays in this, well, it doesn't get much darker than Henry Drax, a animalistic, instinctual, nasty gentleman you do not want to be anywhere with, let alone on a whaling expedition in the 1850s, trust me. But this project is well worth your time. It is on AMC and AMC Plus. The first episode, depending on when you hear this, is probably out by now. July 15th is the date when it premieres. And as I said, it's 6 episodes in all. Well worth your time. This was also a good excuse just to catch up on a great number of things. Colin's been busy. He just ran his first marathon. He just completed working with Ron Howard on a film. He teased that he's about to go start working with the great Martin McDonagh. They're going to reteam, which I'm thrilled about. They, of course, have worked, they worked together on In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths. And now another film, including, I think he said, Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan, who I'm also a big fan of. So that's coming. But of course, I couldn't let Colin go without talking a bit about The Batman. Colin stars in The Batman as the Penguin, Oswald Cobblepot. So yes, there is some Batman talk in this, and some stuff I hadn't heard about that I think is going to make some news. So if you're here for the Batman talk, you will not be disappointed. Plus, we talk comfort movies, and Colin chose a great one, a great romantic comedy from the early 80s. Yes, we're talking Tootsie. So this episode has it all. In addition, other things to mention. Well, a lot of you have probably by now seen Black Widow, whether you've seen it in theaters or on Disney Plus. My conversation with Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh is up on MTV News' YouTube page. That was a delight. People seem to be digging that. Also got some great response from my extended conversation with Henry Cavill for WitcherCon. Yes, Henry invited me to chat with him as kind of like the big event of WitcherCon, which was this kind of deep dive, geeky conversation with Henry about all things Witcher and just his interest in gaming and fantasy. And as I've said before, he's the real deal. He loves this stuff, and it shows through in this conversation. And I'm so thrilled you guys seem to be digging it. That is on, I put it on my Instagram page. Like, if you go on Instagram and Linktree, you can check it out there. Or if you just go to YouTube, search Witcher Henry Cavill, it's probably the first thing that will come up, that 45-minute conversation with Henry Cavill. What else? Oh, here's the big thing I need to mention. There's a new game night up on Patreon. Brand new game night. And we have a returning champion. He's not a champion, but we love him nonetheless. Sam Heughan returns to game night alongside Jamie Alexander, of course you know from Blindspot and the Thor films, and Karen Gillan, who we know and love from Doctor Who and Jumanji and her new film, Gunpowder Milkshake. So that's the trio on game night, and I don't know what more I need to do for you guys. That's entertainment right there. 45 minutes of silly games with Karen Gillan, Sam Heughan, and Jamie Alexander. It is a delight filled with surprises and lots of fun and lots of laughs. Go over to patreon.com/happysadconfused to check it out. You will not be disappointed. Okay, I think that's enough plugs for now. Let's get to the main event. The delightful Mr. Colin Farrell joining me from Los Angeles on a brief break in between projects to hype up his new one, The Northwater, on AMC and AMC+. Here's me and Colin Farrell. No pomp, no circumstance, but I am very pleased to welcome Mr. Colin Farrell back to the podcast. It's just like totally normal, just two dudes in weird boxes on our screens talking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good to see you, man, though. Thank you for doing this.
Life in its most remote form for us.
It's bizarre. Privileged
folk. Yeah, it's strange. It's still strange. I mean, it's nice to see that the world is returning to some sense of normality, but then of course there's the evolution of this thing and the Delta variant, and it's just relentless, really, you know. God, what a year it's been.
Yeah, we've been riding different waves. I mean, yeah, here in New York, yeah. It was insane at the start, then everybody gets their turn. LA had their turn. It's been wild. Yeah. But we're starting to get back to some kind of
Lovely, man. When I left here, I just did a film in Australia, and I was there for 4 months, and that was a godsend, because as you probably know, Australia and New Zealand really, they did the hard work.
They figured it out. Yeah.
They just did the hard work, and they did what they needed to do. And there was a sense of conformity, which is needed, you know. And there was not that people were happy that they had to lock down, not that people were happy that they had to wear masks, but they did what they needed to do and they shut it down. I mean, there's a few outbreaks now, but when I arrived into the Gold Coast about 5 months ago now, I remember there was two outbreaks, two cases of COVID in Brisbane, and it was front page news. Two cases of COVID in Brisbane, and I thought, are you fucking kidding me? I've had two cases of COVID in my living room, you know, back in Los Angeles. So when I left here 5 months ago, this place was like many parts of the world, was totally closed down. People were suffering psychologically as well. I mean, you know, the mental health of so many people has been put under great strain, yeah, over the last year and a half. But to be there, to arrive in Australia, it was unnerving at first, but it was amazing. We had this really COVID-free experience for 4 months. And then coming back here about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I came back, and it was great to see that the world was, as I say, returning to a greater sense of openness and, you know, a little less fear and stuff. But what a year it's been in so many ways, socially and politically. And it's just been so trying.
It's funny to hear you describe the stuff in Australia. I feel like for those of us in the States, we were like watching like the cast of Thor and other things, like kind of like living like the old world. Like we were like, we had our like nose pressed up against the glass, be like, oh, look, humanity can still exist. It was so exciting to see.
No,
glad you got a taste of that.
Totally. I mean, to be able to, and it is one of those things where, you know, unfortunately, as human beings, oftentimes we don't appreciate the things that we have until they're lost, etc. Yeah. It was one of those things. I mean, the idea of going and sitting in a coffee shop when I got to Australia and having a cup of coffee was borderline emotional.
I believe it. You know, the first time I saw a movie here again, it was pretty special.
Being able to shake someone's hand, give someone a hug when you see them. Holy shit. Powerful.
So are you in the middle of work right now in LA? Where are you at?
No. I'm just back now. Just catching up with life. And I'm only home. It's a quick turnaround, a quicker turnaround than I would like to have, actually. But I leave for Ireland in about 4 weeks to do a gig with Martin McDonagh again, who I did in Bruges with.
I saw that listed. I was going to ask you if it's coming to fruition. You and Brendan getting back together?
Yeah, me and Brad getting the band back together. Yeah,
amazing.
Me and
Brad.
I think Barry Keoghan is going to be in it.
I've
worked with. Yeah, Barry's fantastic. So yeah, it'll be great, man. On the shooting on the west of Ireland, the script is obviously, when you're talking about Martin, it's always this way, but it's extraordinary and so unusual. And I'm looking forward to that. But between now and then, just home catching up.
So the last time we chatted, we were talking about Dumbo. This speaks to the breadth, the fact that you contain multitudes. Because now in The Northwater, you, my friend, are playing the animal that men fear. You are the I don't know. This guy is fascinating. Talk to me. There are different reasons to take on projects. And I very much enjoyed this one, but I can only imagine from your perspective, there's the content of this part there, but there's also the adventure of making a movie. And this seems, or a TV series, this seems like just an expedition like no other that you could take part in.
Yeah, it was. It was really, look, in the 20 years I've been doing this for a living, I've ridden horses through the desert in Morocco. I've dived in this part of the world. I've done various things in places that I never really imagined or thought that I'd arrive at. But to be 500 miles from the North Pole and about 300 miles from any civilization on three ships for 5 weeks, shooting on ice floes and shooting on the boat was extraordinary. To be surrounded by polar bear, which we were, I mean, there were polar bear spottings regularly, and it was very humbling and awe-inspiring, and it was also quite hostile. But it was we all of us together, you know, every now and then you'll find yourself doing films in an experience with people, and if the experience is extreme enough, there's kind of an unspoken understanding that you people that are there at that moment and you alone will have this shared experience that will take you through the rest of your days. And this was one of those. I mean, it was very moving to be somewhere that wasn't in any way poisoned by the clutter of man.
Yep.
You know, the things that go on in cities, you know, cities being primarily, of course, a dream of man, and then a realization of that dream with varying degrees of success and appalling degrees of failure as well. All that was gone. It was just we were at the whim of a very raw and a very brutal and a very ancient nature. And it was really humbling and it was really profound to be there. And I just loved it. And I dream of going back to Svalbard. I dream of going back there. And there's a simplicity to the place that just allows for so much of your own experience as a human being and your own realizations that you are nothing. You are a speck. Yeah. And you can't live like you're a speck because you have a wife and you have children and you have to make a livelihood and you have dreams that you wish to pursue. But at the end of the day, our lives as humans, if we're lucky, we get to 80, 90. Our lives as humans are so brief and we are such a speck in the grand scheme of things. And sometimes, you know, to feel that is not to feel... is not to kind of underplay the importance of your life at all. It's to actually be invited into capitalizing on the short time that you have on this planet. And the capitalizing of that short time might just be to realize how lucky you are to make the trip. I say that as a very fortunate person who, you know, was brought into the world in a particular way and has had the experiences that I've had. But I think for all of us, for Sam Spruill and Jack O'Connell and Stephen Graham and Andrew Haig and all the other actors and all the crew as well, we all shared this kind of uncommon experience together up north. And it was really, God bless Andrew for insisting that we did the 5 weeks up there. As far as Drax, the character, went, I just never had read anything or been offered anything like it. That was as cruel and that was as brutal and yet utterly lacked compunction or any kind of awareness or desire to investigate his behavior. He was just an animal of pure instinct, you know, and yeah. It was a very different time in the kind of evolution of man as a quote unquote questionable man as a civilization unto himself. So, the piece was very brutal and I was just curious as to how it would all play out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for those that have seen the trailer or little bits of it, I mean, it's hard to kind of like give a sense of it. But yes, it's all on the screen and it's not, you know, this is not made Avatar style in a box, as much as I love that kind of stuff, too. But like,
me too.
But, you know, imagine being on a whaling expedition in the 1850s, hardship as that entails, and then being stuck on it with maybe like the worst possible human being. It's like being stuck with Daniel Plainview of There Will Be Blood on a whaling expedition, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's, as you say, I was going to say, I mean, you said like he operates on instinct. He embraces his animal instincts. He doesn't seem to...
philosophy as well. You know, there's a couple of things there's, I can't remember the lines, but talking about, you know, laws being just one thing that man chooses suits him over another. And there's definitely kind of his own little hard-boiled ideology on what the meaning of life is and what man's purpose on this planet is. But as far as he's concerned, he's you know, unapologetically nihilistic, where he doesn't find any kind of spiritual meaning in the existence of man. It is just man is an animal that has certain desires, certain thirsts, and certain physical, not emotional or psychological, but physical needs. And he must be allowed to pursue them at all times without any hesitation or apology. And so to play that character was kind of liberating. I mean, he was so dark on the page, I wondered, you know, what it would do to my mood. But it right. was, it was actually, in any, if anything, and you know, it is always artifice and it is always fiction, and we always have the knowledge of that. No matter how deep you are into something, there's always at least a third eye that is aware that there's cameras and crew. And so I was kind of given carte blanche to experience the dream of this creature, and it was so much fun. I really enjoyed playing him, as much as I wouldn't like to have a coffee with him, which I wouldn't, or be stuck in a cabin with him or on a boat for months. But it was the cruelty and the brutality of that industry, of the whaling industry, and the kind of complementary behavior of the men as they're designed in our piece, that pursued that as a living. I don't know what Stephen Graham's character says at one stage, where the refugees of civilization, I think, is what he calls the men. And that kind of made, if not poetic, made a certain kind of very real sense, because there's a brutality that they live in and all around, where obviously when they're pursuing their livelihood, it's incredibly bloody and incredibly brutal and incredibly inhumane. But even when they're on dry lands, they're living lives that are morally questionable at best.
Yeah. By the time you get to set, I'm curious, because you obviously have a bunch of choices you can make in preparation, and then a lot of that you probably often have to throw out the window because it kind of changes in the environment and the other actors and the director. But like in the case of something like this, I know you put on some weight, you obviously have facial hair, you have the voice, there are things that the accoutrements that make up this yeah. character. Does that change when you get on set, like on day one, that if Andrew, your director, says like, oh wait, I didn't think he was going to sound like that. Yeah, are you up Schitt's Creek? Like, what happens?
Well, I was at a bit of to be honest with you, I was at a bit of a loss. I was struggling a bit to find his voice. And in the book, I don't know if it's ever, because I read the book, I can't remember, a few years back now, if it's ever defined exactly where he's from. I think he might have been a Yorkshire man. So I was going to do kind of a version of a Yorkshire accent, and I worked with a dialect coach on that. And then there was this other hodgepodge that I ended up kind of leaning more into. But I literally brought Andrew into my cabin on the boat about a week before we started shooting. And I said, these are the two sounds. I feel a bit vulnerable now. Oh, uncertainty. But I didn't know. And I thought, okay, I can take a shot myself, or I can just put my ego to the side and ask the director to come in and kind of audition for the director in a way. I mean, obviously I had the part, but I auditioned these two different, almost different dialects or different tones for him, and we both decided on. So that was one kind of very clear stage of evolution for me that was unanswered until about 7 days before we started shooting. All of the actors did their own individual work, as actors do, and then we didn't have too much time to rehearse, but everyone was so extraordinary that it just came together. It all felt very natural. I mean, I'd done some physical work, of course, but by the time we got up there, Andrew created such an environment that was so conducive to work, and it was all very brutal and very raw, and the body was kicking into survival mode, and the days were long and hard in a really lovely way. You know, we would get up, it would be dark, we would watch the sun rise, 360 degrees, there was no land for hundreds of miles, we would just see ice caps as far as the eye could see, and we would disembark the boat and stand on a piece of 3 foot deep ice over hundreds of meters of cold, dark water, and we would shoot until the sun started to set, and we would chase the light and shoot until it was pretty dark, and then we were fucked by the end of every day. We're so tired. The body had been fighting to maintain core temperature for 12 hours, and we would have our dinner, and the lads would usually drink, and I'd listen to them upstairs, you know, sober jocks in his cabin downstairs, and prepare
them. Keep it down up there. Yeah. Yeah. And then
I was right beneath the bar, which cruel irony to that. But
the ghost of Christmas past haunting you. Yeah.
I seemed to be pared down to its most essential. Yeah. You know, it really was. It was work, sleep, eat. It was work, sleep, eat for 5 weeks. And I loved it. I don't want to say it was monastic, but there was a kind of a simplicity that was just divine to just inhabit, you know.
And
there
no cell phone service. I mean, you're necessarily
cut off, no cell phone service, no emails, none of the usual obfuscations that we live with daily. It was just all of us were given absolute permission to just really inhabit this world and to be together. And to just really be together and create this kind of communal experience that, as I said, I'll carry with me for all my days. It was very profound.
Work, sleep, work, eat, polar bear plunge too. You fit that in polar there somewhere.
Yeah. You had to, didn't you? You had to.
I don't know if I would have had to, but you did it. How did it go?
I think everyone kind of did, man. It was amazing. It was brutal. It was really, really shocking. I mean, I thought because I was a bit large, and I had put on the weight very fast. So my concern, being somewhat of a hypochondriac at times, was I going to have a heart attack? So
I would think the added girth would help a little bit.
I was well insulated as far as the cold world. I was well insulated, but the shock that me poor old ticker experienced as soon as I hit that water, man, it was brutal. I'll never forget it. And yet I almost blacked out. I almost went into some kind of survival mode where I can't fully grasp the memory of it at the same time.
Yeah, if you look at the video, you're not reveling in the moment. You're not like, let me just hang here. You're like, this is it.
Get out of there. See how fast I try and get out of there. And somebody was, if you look at the video, you see this errant finger come into the shot. And I think somebody was pointing outward and saying, swim out more. And there was no fucking way I was doing that. I bolted. I think I might have said mommy when I surfaced. It was terrifying, actually. And that was cool.
This is your first dip back into the television world, I believe, since True Detective.
True Detective, yeah. But there's no difference. There's no difference at all.
No?
I mean, if you want to talk about the first job that I did, my first professional job as an actor was a TV show called Ballyhoo's Angel in Ireland. And that was one camera on sticks, and you'd lift the camera up yourself as the actor and walk to the next field. You know what I mean? It was all shot in rural Ireland, just outside of Dublin, and the Wicklow Mountains there. And that was very what one would think of 10 years ago or 5 years ago when one thinks of television. It was very fast turnover. As I say, one camera on sticks. Now the production values are equitable. You know, they really, I mean, the scope of what we did on the North Water was, mostly unparalleled in regard to anything I've done in film, and certainly
all one writer and director. It's not like you're rotating through directors.
It was Andrew. Yeah, it was all coming from Andrew. But and likewise on True Detective, that all was born of the brilliant minds of Nick Pizzolatto. So you know, and while there was other directors, part of me wished at times that Nick would have directed all 8 episodes. He was so brilliant and had such a kind of an understanding of the core of what he was trying to reach. But that also, True Detective had huge production values, and it just, there's no difference now. And at the end of the day, as an actor, honest to God, man, you're telling a story,
yeah,
and you're just trying to inhabit it and serve the narrative, not even your own character, but understand that your character is a spoke of a bigger wheel. You're trying to just serve the story. And so it's all the same.
Have you watched much lately? Are you in that zone?
No, I started watching The Mayor of Easttown, which is really good. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, there's so much stuff on, man. I mean, you're so spoiled. I find myself starting things and then, the patience one has decreases, because if you're not gripped instantly, you know, it's terrible. There's just so much stuff. I love documentaries. No, I go down YouTube holes as well. Do you know what I mean?
What's a YouTube hole you fall into?
I was up till 5 o'clock this morning watching this dude. What was his name? Wes Kane, was it? This dude doing this 250-mile fucking ultra marathon through Sedona and the old mining town of Jerome, and it ended through Prescott, and it ended in Flagstaff over 5 days. And God bless him, he bothered his arse to take a GoPro the whole way, and it's on YouTube, and it's actually an extraordinarily hypnotic 57 minutes. But yeah, I get on YouTube holes, man.
Did you just finish your first marathon, by the way?
I did. Yeah. That was,
congratulations. How was that?
Thanks. Yeah, it was great. It was amazing. It was brutal. It was brutal, and I was ill prepared to a certain degree, and then I was as prepared as best I could in another way. But it was suitably painful.
How was the chafing?
Chafing wasn't bad, because I had a nice pair of well fitting loose shorts on. Under I had a shirt like this, and I had a cut under my armpit. But no, it was just the It was just, you know, they talk about when you hit the wall, when you hit your lactic threshold and your muscles are poisoned by lactic acid. And I hit the wall at like badly face plants at mile 23. I struggled from 18, but then mile 23 on was very, very, very painful, I have to say.
You don't have to sell me on it, I believe you.
The singularity of just preparing for it and the, it was the, I mean, we're all looking for, what are we looking for in life? I don't know about you, man, but I assume all of us are we're either looking for meaning and purpose, or we're struggling, even if unconsciously, under the lack of meaning and purpose. And so what a marathon does is, even if it's just for the 3 months leading up, or the 4 or 5 or 6 hours it might take, or 2 or 3, it just gives you this incredible sense of meaning and purpose. Yeah. Really beautiful. I loved it, and I'm kind of fascinated by it now. So I'd love to do more.
I promise not to get you into trouble, but, and I'm sure we'll talk about it down the line. You've shot the Batman with an amazing cast. But as much as the cast impresses me, I have long been a devoted fan of Mr. Matt Reeves.
His
films, Let Me In, which it's impossible to remake that film, but he did an amazing
job
with that.
How could you, the boldness to remake this? The set of cojones the man has on him to even, because that was such a perfect, perfect film and a perfect parable and a perfect love story between two children. I mean, it was such a profound experience. Totally. At the right way. So yeah, he's obviously very bold. He obviously has an unimaginably keen technical proficiency when it comes to the advent of technology and the art of making film, not just as commercial endeavor, but as real expression and using film as a canvas and creating worlds like you did with the Apes films, which were extraordinary. And yet, of course, as we know, it's such a jaded thing to say, but it's true. Unless there's some kind of emotional heft at the core of these things, it doesn't matter how detailed the world that's created, and it doesn't matter how extraordinary the visual accoutrement may be. And he has it all. He has it all, Matt. He's brilliant and he's driven. Fuck, he is so driven. And I get the sense that he understands, but really steps into and inhabits the responsibility that he has with a mythology that is as loved and is as important to as many people as the world of Batman is, you know? And he stepped into that and he inhabited it fully, and just an insane engine as well. An insane engine. I mean, what the hours the man worked, and obviously COVID began to grip the world while we were shooting, and I left London in March and we were stood down for 4 or 5 months, and then we went back, and then obviously Robert got sick, and that was like, fucking Batman has COVID.
Exactly.
Batman has COVID. No, it's just like, fucking hell. And so, but we finished it after, I think they were probably from first turnover to last cut, was probably 12 or 14 months, the shoot. Wow. And he's cutting it together now. I haven't heard sight nor sound of him. I don't know what he's up to, but I know he's deep into it. And I'm only in it for 5 or 6 scenes, so I can't wait to see the film, because it won't be ruined by my presence.
You know, I guarantee
like, things are, yeah, totally. Like, really, it's a freebie for me. I'll get a little bit uncomfortable for the fucking 9 minutes I have, and then the rest of it, I cannot wait to see how he brought this world to life, because the sets were extraordinary. The production design, extraordinary. And his use of music and sound will be extraordinary. And as you said, the cast, from, you know, all of them, Robert and Zoe to, you know, extraordinary cast.
My one other question on it, I'm just curious, because like when that trailer hit, like it took all of us like 5 times to watch it to even know.
Well, that was like 6 weeks of shooting, man.
I know. It was way early. But like we couldn't even like see that was you in it. So like, can you just talk to me?
I'm buried.
That all prosthetics? Is it just like?
Yeah, man.
It's remarkable.
Fucking hell, why am I blanking on Mike's name? It's not, Mike Marino. Yeah, Mike Marino, who's a genius, who's an absolute veritable genius. And that word is thrown around a lot, but he is a drawing, sculpting, shaping genius. And he created this visage for the Penguin. And me and Matt had talked about physically what the character's stature would be. And I had been quite big for the North Water, and I didn't want to naturally go big again because I had a few little health things as a result of the North Water. And I was just like, fuck, this acting thing ain't this important. You know, I leave it to other actors to go that much up and down, and God bless them. And I wish them good health. But for me, I was just like, the North Water, I think that's the last time I'll go up that much.
Right.
So we decided on, you know, fat suit, the girth suit, And Mike Marino created this. Look, I only had, as I said, five or six scenes or seven scenes. And I wasn't quite, I was at the early stages of looking at what I felt I could do or bring to it. And I was at a bit of a loss. And then when I saw what Mike did, I the whole character made sense to me. I swear to God, I saw what he did and I just went, okay, okay. And I got really excited about it. All that to say that most of, if anyone ever thinks what I do in Batman is a decent performance, I'll gladly take 49% of the credit. I honest to God, I'm not joking you. Because there's, you know, mask work and like Jung used mask work and certain Eastern philosophies have used mask work. It's a very powerful way to allow the shadow to have permission, the shadow that exists in all of us to have permission, because you're aware that you're not going to be judged or you feel protected from, you know, the awful rule of judgment that man inflicts upon each other. Well, that's gone. And so the sense of, I you know, conventional logic would say maybe with a full face covering you that it would be limiting, that it would, you would feel constricted. It was 100% the opposite. It was so damn liberating. It was so liberating and I felt so free and I felt like, and I may be proven wrong, I felt like it was impossible to be too big. Cut to Farrell's too big. but like I had such, might get such permission to just explore, you know, behaviors by the brilliance of the work that he did, Mike Marino.
Amazing.
And I mean, if there's a better makeup that year, I don't be thinking about Oscars truly, but they should just give him if there's a better makeup, it's extraordinary what he did. Extraordinary.
Well, I can't wait to dig into it even more next year. But before I let you go, sir, I did ask you, as I've been asking everybody this past year.
Oh, yeah, Tootsie.
We've needed comfort. I don't know about you. And I've been asking folks, because it's very telling. And I love geeking out about filmmaking, as you can tell. Tell me, how did you arrive at Tootsie?
I was saying, you know, the way actors are super, the publicists prepare them and stuff. So I was given an email and there was the list of, just so you know, this is, and so there were so many of the films, like Jurassic Park would be on my list. And Back to the Future would be on my list, and any of the Indiana Jones. And when I think of comfort films, to me, there is a nostalgic element. The comfort films, like I saw other brilliant films like Casino and Long Day's Journey Into Night, and I go, they are not comfort. I mean, Casino a little, because it's so colorful and Joe Pesci brings such a mad humor to it as well. But for me, comfort films are always about nostalgia.
Yeah.
They're usually films that I fell in love with when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, Tootsie is one that I fell in love with as a kid. And it's one that has stood the test of time and survives just new. It's just so hilarious. And it's also incredibly moving. And it has a great dig at the actor's mentality and psychology as well. Dustin Hoffman's extraordinary. Sydney Pollack, the scenes between Dustin Hoffman and Sydney Pollack.
I was going to say, that's where we get Pollack's opposite.
Those scenes I would just watch over and over and over again.
I've mentioned Sydney Pollack on this podcast.
It's one of the great performances.
I think generally speaking, Sydney Pollack is like one of the most underrated actors, like not a false move.
Extraordinary director that people don't give him the credit as an actor that he absolutely deserves. Yeah.
But yes, there are a handful of scenes in this film that I'm sure get richer for you as you progress in your acting career.
Terry Garr, who was always just a joy, you know, whether it's this or Young Frankenstein. Charles Durning is so moving as the father, you know, and even up to the very end when he comes into the bar and he sits beside the bar and he goes to give him the ring, give it to me outside. You know, it's, and yet they make, it's just such a, it's a perfect, Tootsie to me is a perfect film. And I've been asked through the years to share a role that I would have loved to have played. That's been my stock answer.
That's a good one. Has any agent ever told you in a meeting, no one will hire you? Sydney Pollack or Michael Dorsey.
I think they have, they haven't given that to me in a second person, but I think I have been referenced in the third person, probably behind closed doors, no one will hire him. And I think I was very close to that, if not fully there, around 2005 or so. That's the God's honest truth, but not in a while.
Infamously, the behind the scenes of that movie is fascinating, because I don't know if you know this, I mean, like Sydney Pollack and Dustin Hoffman apparently like really did not get along at all. I mean, Dustin has a reputation. I mean, he's an amazing actor, but you know, he's an intense actor who sometimes rubs directors the wrong way. Sure. Do you, you know, we talked about this on the last podcast, but I'm curious just your general philosophy. Like, I'm sure you've had friction with different filmmakers. Is your belief now that that can elicit a great, a greater end?
I think anytime, I think anyone that says that there's a, look, one of the beautiful things for me about what I do for a living is that it defies any kind of quantifiable way of recognizing how it should be done.
Either
as an actor or a director, each director has their own different style, their own different aesthetic, their own different means by which they go about capturing their story on film, whether it's Martin McDonagh or Yorgos Lanthimos or Ron Howard, who I just worked with, or Terry Malick. They're all so extraordinarily different. The only thing they share kind of is a goal, and how they go about that is different. And as an actor, me, I never come in and say, I like to work this way or I like to work that way. I don't want to do that. I don't want to fall into a habit, to be honest with you. I mean, look, inevitably you fall into mannerisms and habits anyway, but as much as I can stave them off the past, the better. Right. And one of the organic ways for me to do that, this isn't the reason I'm sharing what I like to do. It's just an organic kind of byproduct and a helpful byproduct, but just organically, I just love going to work and doing it the way the director wants to do it. I really do. I like, so, you know, I think Woody Allen, when I worked with him, he said, good morning, Ewan, on day three to me. Right. I'm not even joking. Morning, Ewan. And so, you know, we didn't rehearse a second. He didn't even know who I was. And then, you know, I'm going to go to work with Martin now, and Martin and me and Brendan and Kerry and Barry will do 2 or 3 weeks of rehearsal, like theatre. We'll get into a blank room with a table and a kettle that we can make cups of tea, and we'll talk about the script. And then there's every permutation in between. Some directors that like to do games, some that like to do some rehearsal. I just love to go off the director and see how that experience plays out.
Well, the breadth of the filmmakers you've worked with, again, we alluded to this last time, and you just mentioned you just worked with Ron Howard. I believe you're now attached to a Todd Solondz film, which sounds, he doesn't work that often, so that's thrilling.
I'd love to work with Todd. Have you ever interviewed him? He's beautiful, man.
Todd, no, never.
Yeah, he's lovely.
Doesn't work enough, so I'm thrilled he's betting back on the horse. That's great.
Yeah. And it'd be great to work with Rachel again.
And by the way, you know, good word out of Cannes from your film After Yang, so that's another one to look out for.
He's oh my god, fucking cats.
The cats are taking over the Farrell
household. Oh, these two.
How many cats are there?
Two, and okay. That'll be it. Yeah, two. Brother and sister, Mia and Murphy. No, but yeah, Coconut is a very, did you see Columbus?
I did, with John Cho, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Coconut is very special, and I loved working with him. Loved working with him. I mean, he runs about as gentle and quiet and soft a set as I've ever experienced, you know?
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, a lot to talk about in the coming years, months.
Yeah, brother, I'll be around. We'll have a chat.
Thank you, buddy. And thank you for geeking out on all things The North Water, which sounds like, you know, it's all on the screen, but it sounds like there are just as many adventures off screen. So people should definitely check it out. It's a 6-part limited series on AMC. I look forward to our future chats, sir. And if you guys have not ever seen Tootsie, what are you doing with yourselves?
Oh, man. Classic.
Cinematic brilliance.
I showed it to my sons as well, and they dug it big time.
I love it. Thanks, buddy, always. Really appreciate it.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.